From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. It's day one for the 116th Congress today, and it's already made history. A record number of women sworn in, and Nancy Pelosi once again picks up the gavel as Speaker of the House, the first person in a half century to hold that leadership position twice. As Democrats take control of the House, we're already seeing the realities, though, of a divided government in the midst of a government shutdown. Here's Pelosi right after a closed-door meeting on border security at the White House yesterday.
We're asking the president to open up government. We are giving him a Republican path to do that. Why would he not do it?
Why not? Well, President Trump says it's because Democrats aren't offering what he wants for border security and that wall.
The 5.6 billion is such a small number. Literally, it's a month. It's 1 month in Afghanistan. And we're talking about national security. This isn't just a border. This is national security. This is health and wellness. This is everything.
This hour on Point, Democrats in the House, Republicans in the Senate and White House, and what's realistically possible for the 116th Congress. And you can join us. What issues do you want to see the new Congress take up this year? Are you hopeful that congressional Democrats and the president can find some common ground, any common ground, on border security? What do you think Democrats can realistically accomplish in the House, and how should Republicans respond? Well, joining us first today from Washington is Sahil Kapoor, national political reporter for Bloomberg News. We've got links to his great reporting at onpointradio.org. Sahil, it's great to have you back.
Hi, Meghna. Great to be back.
Okay, so let's start off with this meeting yesterday at the White House over border security and sort of the entree that it gives us to how House Democrats may be approaching their new leadership here. What happened in that meeting, and is there any way forward on border security and ending the government shutdown?
Well, it was a meeting between the president and senior White House officials, as well as congressional leaders from both parties in both chambers, and it ended with no palpable sign of progress. The battle lines remain now as they ever were, and they didn't change in that meeting. Democrats refused to give President Trump money for a concrete or steel border wall, and the president remains adamant that he's not going to sign bills to fund the government or reopen the government without that wall.
So let's play a little bit of tape here of more of what Nancy Pelosi said, Representative Nancy Pelosi, in an interview that aired on NBC's Today Show just this morning. Savannah Guthrie asked Pelosi about border security and the wall.
Are you willing to come up and give him some of this money for the wall? Because apparently that's the sticking point.
No, nothing for the wall. We're talking about border security.
Nothing for the wall, but that means it's
Well, we can go through this all back and forth. Mm-hmm. No. How many more times can we say no? Nothing for the wall.
Okay, so that was Nancy Pelosi just this morning on NBC. Sahil, if we have House leadership saying no, nothing for the wall, and the president saying no opening the government without wall funding, are there back channel negotiations going on that could take us down to a point where both sides save face and there is some agreement and the government is opened up again?
There are no meaningful negotiations happening at this point, according to the sources I am talking to. The feeling among congressional leaders is that this may need to go on for a little bit longer before something shifts, before something meaningful shifts. And the dynamics right now are that Democrats are about to be sworn into the House today. Nancy Pelosi is set to become Speaker. Progressive Democrats are adamantly against funding for the wall, and they have the votes to pass legislation in the House of Representatives, likely today, that will reopen the government without any funding for the president's wall. They'll fund 6 out of the 7 parts of the government that are closed down for the rest of the fiscal year through next September, and they will fund DHS, which is where the dispute is over the wall, for just a month to buy some time. Now, that goes to the Republican-led Senate then. The Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, the Kentucky Republican, has made very clear he's not going to allow a vote on any piece of legislation that doesn't have the president's support. So they are stuck.
So what risk, then, are the Democrats taking here? Because, yes, I mean, as we heard soon-to-be Speaker Pelosi there saying that, you know, they're standing on principle and don't want to give any funding for the wall. But do they risk then having the ongoing government shutdown and this impasse really be the focus, the center of political gravity, so much so that any other efforts that Democrats might have in the House are totally overshadowed?
Right. The risk is that they start their new tenure in the House majority by having their policy agenda and their entire agenda overshadowed by this government shutdown. But beyond that, polls show that President Trump is taking the largest share of the blame for the shutdown. And he put himself in a bad position by going on camera and emphatically saying, I will own the shutdown. I'm the one shutting it down. I'm not going to blame you, Chuck, when he was talking to Chuck Schumer in that acrimonious meeting. And he said, I'm proud to shut the government down over border security. So it's a little hard for him to go from that to saying it's Democrats who are shutting it down, although he's certainly making that argument now. Now, with regard to Nancy Pelosi, this issue, this fight is a bit of a gift to her on just the first day, because this issue unites her Democratic caucus, which is ripe for many divisions on big issues where, you know, progressives are going to want to go a certain way and these centrist moderate Democrats who represent purple and red parts of the country are going to want to go another way. The wall unites Democrats. There's nobody in her caucus that feels strongly about this or that has any desire to break with their party in support of the president.
You know, point taken on that, Sahil, but Democrats have spent years now criticizing the GOP as a party that can't govern. And now if they are in the leadership in the House or the majority in the House, they have an opportunity to demonstrate that, you know, will the Democrats be able to be the party that can govern? And doesn't there have to be some kind of compromise, some sort of finding of common ground in order to move government forward?
Right. And of course, the risk to Democrats is that they have to appear as though they are, you know, taking this seriously and that they're not being intransigent about it. Now, their argument is that they're happy to give money for border security in other areas. They're fencing, their cameras at the border, their vehicular barriers, there are thousands of Border Patrol agents. They are willing to authorize $1.3 billion in this government funding bill for fencing and repairs. Where they draw the red line is a concrete or steel wall. They view that as ineffective and expensive. And frankly, many in the Democratic base view it as a monument to the president's nativism. So it's politically difficult for them to go there.
Well, Sahil Kapoor with Bloomberg News, stand by here for just a second because I want to welcome into the conversation Tracy Seffel. She's a Democratic communications specialist. She served as a senior advisor to the Super PAC Ready for Hillary during the 2016 election. And she's with us from Chicago today. Tracy Seffel, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thank you.
It's great to have you. First of all, let's just spend a little bit more time here over the current impasse over border security and the wall. I mean, you heard Sahil's analysis there. How much is this serving to Democrats' advantage at the moment politically? And do you also see a potential longer term risk?
Well, there's no question that the whole situation is a mess. But what the same situation is illustrating is the Democrats in particular, through Nancy Pelosi, through Chuck Schumer, they're offering tangible, reasonable proposals. And Mitch McConnell is playing into the president's hand by saying he won't even allow a vote without this wall that people speak of so seriously, but yet is such an absurd concept. So what you have is a contrast. You have Democrats saying, OK, we're here to work. We're going to put forth legislation that is reasonable. And you have Republicans, the party of Trump, just with their hands locked and tied behind them because of this fantastical notion of a wall. So it's serious versus absurd. Mm-hmm. And that's the way this Congress is kicking off.
Well, so serious versus absurd, pretty stark way of putting it. I'm guessing a lot of people feel that way. But I'm consistently curious or sort of I feel an urgency to figure out how can Washington move forward, right? If mm-hmm. this is the dynamic here. I mean, this is purely hypothetical, but I want to know what you think Democrats would be willing to do here. So, for example, say the president came back. I mean, we heard a little bit ago in that tape that he said he first wants $5.6 billion. What if he just dropped that number? What if he hit $2.5 billion mm-hmm. and some kind of language was able to find – they could find language that everyone feels like a winner? I don't mean to be naive here. I'm serious. Like, what if there was some sort of – middle ground.
Of course.
Would Democrats be willing to make that compromise?
Well, I think Democrats already have, and my friend Sahil would certainly know this in great detail, but I do believe that the Democrats' proposal included $1.5 billion. Mm. So that's real, and that, as he was mentioning, is for very real border security actions and efficiencies and strengthening measures. So that's real, and that's on the table. It's the Senate Majority Leader who's saying, nope, not going to vote on it. So right. I'm with you. I would love to know that there's a way to figure this out. And I was so hoping that Sahil would have a different answer to the question about back-channel negotiations happening. I was hoping he would say, yes, they are. It's disheartening that they're not. But I think that this is the reality. This is the ripple effect of what Trump in the White House means for our federal government.
Well, Sahil, let me jump back to you here for a second, because as you said a little earlier, Senate Majority Leader Republican Mitch McConnell said he's not going to bring any bill to the Senate floor that doesn't have the president's support. Is there some pressure? I mean, is there some pressure that the Senate can bring to this to break the impasse?
Well, the Senate certainly tried to do that on December the 19th before the holiday break. The Senate passed by a voice vote a piece of legislation that would reopen or, you know, at the time, prevent a government shutdown without funding the president's wall. What happened then is the president faced a lot of pressure from his right, including, you know, some of his allies in the House of Representatives, the Freedom Caucus, who said, you cannot surrender on this. And I think he made the calculation that he had campaigned on this wall. It was such a central part of his political identity, his campaign in 2016. It is his panacea issue, for problems people face. He's blamed immigration and migration for things like job losses and crime and opioids. We can argue about whether that's the real, you know, whether that's actually the problem here. But that is his answer to voters. And for him to be backing down on this was politically difficult. So the Senate passed that. The president swerved on it after that. And now his, you know, his allies in the Senate, the Republican leaders, are behind him. So how that changes, it's all about where the White House is. If the White House shifts its line, then you'll see Republican leaders shift with it.
Well, we are talking about what's possible in the 116th Congress now that Democrats are in control of the House. Sahil Kapoor is with us, and so is Tracy Seffel. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the 116th Congress getting sworn in today and Democrats assuming the majority in the House and what's possible with this Congress in a divided government and still in the midst of a government shutdown. Sahil Kapoor joins us today. He's national political reporter for Bloomberg News. Tracy Seffel is with us. She's a Democratic communications specialist joining us from Chicago. We'll be hearing from a Republican analyst in just a few minutes as well. But Tracy Seffel, we're certainly going to come back to the discussion of border security and the wall here because I'm looking at our call board. It's already lit up with people who want to talk about that. But I do also want to just talk about dynamics internally to the Democratic Party in the House right now because something else interesting is going on today. The House Democrats are putting together the rules package, right, for how they're going to govern. And here we're beginning to see how the dynamics may shake out between centrist Democrats and sort of newly emboldened progressive Democrats who have been elected into Congress this year, because there is already a divide over this issue of PAYGO, right, as it's called, a policy which would require Congress to offset all new spending with cuts or increases in revenue elsewhere. And some prominent new Democrats or young Democrats, including California Democrat Ro Khanna and New York's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, have said they would vote against a PAYGO policy. And here's Representative Khanna in a video he posted on New Year's Eve.
It would be unilateral disarmament for House Democrats to adopt PAYGO. The Republicans never did. They passed massive tax cuts for the 1%, and they didn't have any spending cuts to pay for those tax cuts. Now that House Democrats are in charge, some folks want us to limit our policies by adopting PAYGO.
That's California Congressman Ro Khanna. Tracy Seffel, tell us, how do you see this divide this disagreement within the Democratic Party? I mean, what do you think it means for how the party's going to move forward and govern as the majority in the House?
Keywords there are to move forward. And it's very clear, as you've just laid out and as the congressman's elect's points made, that there's a progressive caucus that is going to be vocal, that is going to be challenging, that is going to not take no for an answer, and that is not going to apologize for taking extremely strong stances. And I think what's going to be very fascinating to see here is with Nancy Pelosi as speaker, this is a woman who, as you mentioned, this is the second time she's had this job. Mm-hmm. And what she's certainly known for is her ability to get things done. So this will be an interesting test because on one hand, she's dealing with Trump and all things Trump. And on the other hand, she's going to be dealing with a loud, vocal, sort of obstinate, progressive wing of her own party. So for her, it's an ultimate dance, right? To say, I'm going to keep my caucus happy. I'm going to deliver the results. And I'm going to keep this president on notice. And to do both of those things, I can't think that there's many people who would be better suited for the job than Nancy Pelosi. She's proven that this is something she does and does well. So it's going to be a question. Will the progressives ever relent? Will there be that same sort of back channel behind the scenes handholding? I'm hopeful that that will happen. But I think coming out of the gate, a lot of people are trying to make points very strongly.
Right. You know, Sahil, I'm seeing here that Representatives Mark Pocan from Wisconsin and Pramila Jayapal from Washington, they're the co-chairs of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. They're signaling that they're going to support the overall rules package that's being put forth, even though they oppose PAYGO. Their goal is to actually perhaps change the underlying statute that brought PAYGO into existence to begin with. But do you see the potential, the restiveness, as Tracy is describing, amongst the progressive wings of the Democrats as analogous to what House Republicans had to deal with their Freedom Caucus, for example?
That remains to be seen. Now, the history of the House Democratic Caucus is that when they are in power, it is not the left flank of the party that, you know, has the balance of power, that is the balance of votes in tough situations. It is the right flank of the party. It is moderate centrists in tough districts that, you know, forced a lot of concessions and scaled back the Affordable Care Act, for instance, in 2009 and 2010. So that's how it's been in the past. Now, I've talked to progressives who are going to be, you know, in the new House majority who are determined to change that, including Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, who will be a co-chair of the Progressive Caucus. She said they are going to flex their muscle, in her words, to advance progressive priorities, to use must-pass pieces of legislation like government funding, to, you know, employ tactics like sticking together and you know, demand and refusing to vote for something until their priorities are met and addressed. So we'll see how far they take that. But this will be a major, major challenge for Nancy Pelosi. She's going to face a young progressive flank of many new members who want to make their mark and who want to pursue far-reaching priorities like things like Medicare for All and free college tuition, a Green New Deal that phases out fossil mm-hmm. fuels. And then you have moderate members who want to pursue incremental legislation that the president can sign and who, frankly, want distance from the Democrats' left flank because their identities and their district depend on that.
Right. You know, we should note, by the way, that Republicans didn't include PAYGO in House rules, which is one of the ways they were able to pass the tax cut that added $1 trillion plus to the deficit there. That's one of the arguments that the progressive wing of the Democratic Party is making right now. But let's take a couple quick calls here. Let's go to Daniel, who's calling from Davison, Michigan. Daniel, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. So in the days leading up to the shutdown, the first meeting that Trump had with the Democratic leaders, he said he would be proud to shut the government down. He would own the shutdown. But as soon as it came into effect, he said, the Democrats did this. You know, their choices led to this. And that's been a repeatable pattern for months now, where he'll take credit for any sort of good that comes out of the administration and then immediately deflect to somebody else whenever anything negative comes around. And I was kind of curious, I guess, the thoughts on how we could maybe hold our policymakers accountable for them to hold Trump accountable when he seems to act in a way that when it comes out negatively, it's never his fault. It's somebody else's fault.
Mm. Well, Daniel, thank you for your call. Tracy Seffold, do you have a response for him?
Oh, boy. Well, he's touching on something that seems very central to this president's personality, which is the malleability of facts. I mean, I think in yesterday's cabinet meeting, he was even rewriting the history of Jim Mattis's resignation and saying that, actually he wanted him to leave, when, of course, that's not at all true. So, you know, the norms and standards and structures of our federal government weren't created with someone like this man in mind, who lies, who makes things up, who changes as the wind blows, and so forth. So I don't know that there's some sort of formal way to handle this. Our system just wasn't built for this. And so that's why you hear so many Democratic leaders, you know, just openly admitting they don't know what the end game is here. This is uncharted territory. I'm just thankful that we have rational and sane, tested, you know, very experienced leaders in Congress who can steer a ship, even if the captain of the ship over in the White House is a bit difficult to deal with, much less predict.
Mm.
And frankly, I think it's that last point that's also worth stressing. The notion of predicting what might happen here is a very quaint and outdated concept in 2019. There's no predicting,
right?
Not about the shutdown, not about this Congress, not about the interactions between Congress and the White House. There is no predicting.
Stability is so, I don't know, 2014, I guess. Let's go to Joseph, who's calling from Portland, Oregon. Joseph, you're on the air.
Good day. Thank you for having me. I'll be brief. It just seems like there's a really good a posturing move here that the Democrats could take that they're leaving on the table. They should be forcing down Trump's throat every chance they get with these silly little meetings they do for publicity about Mexico is supposed to pay for this wall. Mexico is supposed to pay for this wall. We heard it for years. We can attack Trump's base. We can show them that he's a liar, that he's not going to deliver on his signature promise. He's going to put the impetus on them, their financial burden. Mexico is supposed to pay for the wall. Mexico is supposed to pay for the wall. That should be the message moving forward. Nancy Pelosi should be shouting that from the rooftops. There's a winning message there. This is the way we're going to take down Trump. We're going to erode his base.
But Joseph, just a quick question. How do you see that working? I mean, what good would it do if I mean, I'm not sure that that's a message that the I mean, the base is already saying, members of the president's base are already saying, yes, they believe the president that Mexico is going to pay for the wall, whether or not, I mean, that's just not true, but they believe it.
But they're not, right? We know that Mexico isn't paying for the wall, ultimately. I guess something like happened yesterday, which happened a couple weeks ago with Pelosi and Schumer in the Oval Office, so that just despicable conference, that's not getting it done. So there has to be a better message. There is a better message. He lied to you. You're paying for this wall. Mexico is not paying for the wall. It needs to be hammered in the same way he hammers it in with his lying rhetoric every single morning. In my opinion, there's a winning technique there, and I hope that the Democratic leadership adopts it today.
Well,
and I'm really excited for today, by the way, just to circle full back around. I'm really excited for this morning. So.
Well, Joseph, thank you so much for your call. Tracy Seffold, I'm going to turn back to you on that. I mean, you're a Democratic communication specialist. I think Joseph is articulating something that many Democrats, I mean, I've heard over the past several weeks, are feeling that taking a harder rhetorical line, you know, given sort of where we are politically in 2019, may be a winning strategy for Democrats. But I don't think there's universal agreement on that.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's a fair point. And I think it's also worth reminding that when you start to build your own message around Trump's broken promises or outright lies, it becomes pretty messy pretty quickly. And I do believe that what Democrats across the country and certainly voters in November's midterm elections are hoping to see some progress, that let's get some work done. We can and we will be fighting with Trump and we will be holding him accountable. But what can we also get done? And I think that we will see beyond the rules package we were discussing earlier. But beyond that, I think we will see a Congress that will put forth meaningful legislation, legislation designed to help families, designed to help strengthen the economy, which, by the way, I'm sure we're all wondering what the markets will be doing today. So it's about challenging Trump. It's about continuing to do so, but never at the expense of getting something done. That is a message not just for 2019, but certainly going into 2020 and the next presidential election.
Right. And I say this with all seriousness. I look forward to a real infrastructure week because I think that's actually a place we could find a lot of common ground here. Tracy and Sahil, stand by here just for a second. I want to get a couple of voices of, again, some audio from members of Congress right now. For example, here's Democrat Steny Hoyer speaking on CNN last week about what he says Democrats plan to do with their House majority.
We intend to pursue a lot of substance. We want to pursue making sure that American people have health care, that their drug costs are affordable for them. We want to make sure their jobs pay well and they have access to good jobs and good wages. We want to make sure that we have a government that is above board, transparent, honest, and serving the people's interests, not the special interests.
That's Democrat Steny Hoyer. So now let's talk a little bit about how Republicans might respond to, or let's talk a little bit more, I should say, to the Democratic majority in the House. Here's incoming House Minority Whip Republican Steve Scalise speaking to Fox News Radio last month about what he says House Republicans will do in the minority.
The most important thing House Republicans need to do is protect the gains that we've made working with President Trump to get this economy back on track. If Pelosi wants to try to reverse the tax cuts, which she's talked about. She wants to take away the tax cuts that hardworking families are enjoying. I don't want Pelosi to be able to take that away, and I'll fight to make sure that doesn't happen.
That's incoming House Minority Whip Steve Scalise. Let's turn now to Alex Conant. He's a Republican strategist and partner at Firehouse Strategies Consulting firm, and former communications director for Senator Marco Rubio. He's joining us from Washington. Alex Conant, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
It's great to have you again. So tell me, like, how do you see how House Republicans, let's start in the House, first of all, will position themselves in this new Congress?
Well, I think you're already seeing some of it. They're going to be Trump's loyal supporters as much as possible. Look, when you're in the minority in the House, you don't have a lot of power. And so most of what they can do is be the voice defending Trump when we have the inevitable oversight hearings, which I expect will begin very soon. They can certainly vote against the Democrats' legislation, but they can't stop the Democrats' legislation. I think they're going to rely more on Senate Republicans and even Trump's veto pen for that. But I think really where you're going to see the House Republicans have the greatest impact is in oversight hearings where they can come to the defense of Trump administration officials who are called up to the Hill or other people that are testifying about Trump one way or the other.
So is there no way for House Republicans, perhaps this is more on the Senate side, but again, for House Republicans to no politically feasible way for them to say, you know what, we're going to be loyal to America and we're going to try and convince the president that there is some kind of funding package for border security. If he wants to call it a wall, fine. Maybe it's not exactly what he wants, but encourage him to come to a place where we can end this government shutdown.
Well, I think actually House Republicans are very closely aligned with Senate Republicans on this matter, which is they're going to wait and see what Trump wants to do. They're not ready to break with the president quite yet, but they certainly do want to see the government reopened. In fact, they didn't want to shut the government down in the first place. They both passed spending bills, as you know, to keep the government open that Trump ultimately rejected. Mm-hmm. And that's why the government ended up shutting down. Look, and remember, the shutdown happened in the context of Trump having a really bad couple of political weeks, starting with the midterms, but then his decision to remove troops from Syria was very unpopular with a lot of Republicans. The criminal justice reform bill, the bipartisan bill that he signed, was unpopular with some conservatives. Obviously, Mattis's resignation, the falling stock market. He needed something to show his base that he was fighting for them, that he was continuing to be the guy that they elected. And to that extent, I think Trump, at least personally, feels that the government shutdown so far is working out to his advantage politically because he's feeling a lot of reinforcements from conservatives who might otherwise be, you know, a little depressed as they see Nancy Pelosi taking the gavel. I think at some point that gets old and Trump wants to reopen the government and he'll look for an off-ramp. And at that point, I think House and Senate Republicans will be eager to give him one.
All right. Well, Alex Conant, Tracy Seffel and Sahil Kapoor, stand by. We're going to be back in just a minute here. What's possible for this new Congress in the midst of this government shutdown? This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Smart journalism, fascinating topics. Words that describe CNN's podcast, The Assignment with Audie Cornish.
Last year, the Army missed its recruitment goal. It had 65,000 spots to fill and came up 10,000 short of that target. Why is it so hard to recruit? How's the Pentagon responding? And how are the voices of service members on social media shifting the balance?
Listen to The Assignment with Audie Cornish wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the 116th Congress and Democrats taking the majority in the House and what's realistically possible with this Congress, of course, in the midst of a government shutdown. I'm joined today by Sahil Kapoor. He's national political reporter for Bloomberg News. Tracy Seffel is also with us. She's a Democratic communications specialist. And Alex Conant also joins us as well. He's a Republican strategist. And let's go straight to the phones. Marty is calling from Biddeford, Maine. You're on the air, Marty.
Yeah, hi, Marty Gorman, calling from Biddeford, Maine. I'm an independent, you know, and it wasn't a good election for independents, but I feel like this shutdown is really proving our point. It seems like there's a clear compromise to be made here, improve border security for DACA or Dreamers path to citizenship. But I think Tracy made this point early in the program, and people just want to see the work get done, and it feels like the two parties at this point just can't govern.
Right, and so are you saying that this is proving that that perhaps America needs another party, another viable party? What are you saying?
I mean, I think we do need voices in the middle who will just focus on getting results and not just making sure the other side doesn't get a win.
Right, Marty, thank you for your call. Sahil Kapoor, let me turn to you on that. What do you say to Marty?
There's a great point that he made about the possibility of a deal of President Trump getting his wall funding for normalizing or codifying DACA. This was actually something that was on the table in February of 2018 when Senator Mike Rounds, a Republican, and Senator Angus King, an independent who caucuses with Democrats, cut a deal that gave the president the full $25 billion he wanted for a wall. And it created a path to citizenship for these so-called Dreamers who are undocumented but brought here illegally as children. The White House emphatically opposed that bipartisan deal
right. Because
it didn't include other pillars that the president wanted, specifically cuts to family-based migration, which he calls chain migration, and the elimination of the diversity visa lottery. That was his best chance to get the wall funding. It was on the table. Almost every Democrat voted for that. And Democrats had caved on that issue at the time, despite the objections from their left flank. But this is where I think the president is being advised by some people who, especially on the issue of immigration, who don't understand the dynamics inside the Democratic Party. And I think he missed his moment there.
So, Alex Conant, let me turn to you then. Is a lot of this bottleneck because of what Sahil is saying, that there are hardliners that are preventing workable compromises that are actually, that most members of both parties could stomach?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the 2018 election, as the caller just said, it was not a great election for independents because the political enthusiasm in both parties right now is really at the more extremes. It's the conservatives and the far progressives in the Republican and Democratic parties who are winning a lot of these primaries, and that's where the energy is. And as we look to 2020, certainly the Democratic primary, you see all the Democrats running for president running to the far left. That said, I do think that there are opportunities in this new Congress for some bipartisan achievements. We're not going to have welfare reform like we did with Clinton or even school reform like we did with Bush. But I do think you could see smaller bipartisan bills, something on prescription drugs, something on infrastructure, maybe something on affordable housing, maybe not the high profile bipartisan bills that everybody likes to see. But I do think that there are some common agreements between the parties and that Trump would like to have at least some bills signed this year into law and that the Democrats would like to have something to show for their 2 years in power at the next election.
Well, Tracy Seffel, would that be satisfactory to Democrats? Because also, I mean, there are a lot of new congressmen and women who are we've talked about this a couple of minutes ago, who are championing, you know, big ideas, Medicare for all, the Green New Deal.
There was an op-ed in the Washington Post today authored by former Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, who suggests taking some caution about the so-called big ideas, as you say. And his point really is that there's work that we can get done in much the same manner Alex is also suggesting. And if the goal here is to get something done, it is important to really focus on the places where we're going to see potential cooperation. And so many of the Democrats who are joining Congress are coming from districts where Trump won in 2016. So these are now Democrats who have won in the district where they saw Trump win the presidency. And what that means is it is an imperative for the Democratic Party to take note of what the points of compromise may be. And here we are again. Let's talk about infrastructure, because that remains a very viable and a very pragmatic place for bipartisan compromise. It would be for Democrats an opportunity to address climate change. For Republicans, it would be an opportunity for some spending to create jobs and to address the infrastructure needs that this country, everyone agrees it should happen. And we can all joke about Infrastructure Week. But I would put that very high on the list of likely compromise victories.
Right. I mean, if I wasn't joking before, I was really serious about Infrastructure Week.
Yes.
Because look,
yes,
when it comes to like tangible needs for the United States of America, fixing our crumbling infrastructure, something I think everybody can relate to, cost a lot, but it would make a lot of jobs. This is one thing that the president was saying during the election that people across the board agreed on. When you travel to other countries and you see their infrastructure, you wonder what's going on in the United States. So we'll do an hour on infrastructure in the coming weeks and months, I promise you. But you know what? I want to turn a little bit here, because there's one aspect of the Democratic majority in the House that we haven't touched on. But of course, it is extremely important. And that is what the Democrats may do in terms of investigating Russian interference in the election, investigating the president. So here's the New York Democratic Representative and incoming chair of the House Judiciary Committee, Gerald Nadler, giving some insight to CBS this morning. He was there yesterday, into what Democrats will do with the new House majority.
For the last 2 years, the president has had no oversight and no accountability from Congress. The Republican Congress was completely derelict in its responsibility to provide oversight. We are going to provide that oversight. We're going to use the subpoena power if we have to. We will call in Mr. Whitaker, for instance. We'll have to protect the Mueller investigation and pass that legislation.
That's Representative Gerald Nadler there, referring to the acting attorney general, Whitaker. On Fox News's Bill Hemmer just last month, California Republican and incoming House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy called for House Democrats to use their new majority to pass bipartisan legislation instead of focusing on presidential investigations.
It looks like what they're going to focus on is just more investigations. I think America is too great of a nation to have such a small agenda. I think there's other problems out there that we really should be focused upon. And And my belief is, let's see where we can work together. Let's move America forward. We've investigated this for a long period of time. Both sides have come up with nothing in the process.
That's House Minority Leader, incoming House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, I should say. Sahil Kapoor, regardless of what Kevin McCarthy might say, I don't see Democrats as having any reason to, I mean, Democrats don't see any reason to not use their powers of investigation now that they're in the majority.
I think that's right. It's a little difficult to predict how far Democrats will go here. I think some of this will be, you know, them captive to the political tides of the moment. If there's a lot of enthusiasm on the left for investigating X or Y issue or X or Y person, then they will have to address that. But right now, I think Democratic leaders and the chairman of these committees are sounding a cautious note. Mm. They're saying they're going to investigate policy, like immigration and family separation, you know, drug policy and ACA implementation, voting rights. I actually asked Speaker-designate Nancy Pelosi recently if she intends to put a bill on the floor to protect the special counsel investigation. And she swerved the conversation. She dodged my question. And she said, no, we're focused on bread and butter issues, lower health care costs, bigger paychecks, infrastructure, all that stuff. The Democrats coming in, the leaders at least, do not want this to appear as though their majority is just about taking on Trump. Now, having said that, one of the biggest things that I expect them to do, and this will likely, you know, spark and turn into a big fight, is pursue the president's tax returns. Democrats believe on the Ways and Means Committee they have legal authority to obtain the president's tax returns. As you can imagine, the White House is likely to put up a fierce fight on this, and it could turn into a legal battle.
Well, Tracy Seffel, though, I mean, are the Democrats being too cautious if Nancy Pelosi doesn't even want to talk about passing legislation to protect the Mueller investigation?
I can only imagine the dodge of that question. But I would say that it's necessary to have the oversight and to utilize the tools that Democrats will have, but it's not sufficient. And to place undue emphasis on oversight or to constantly be raising that issue and focusing on that is, in fact, playing into Republican hands to say this party is just out to get Trump and nothing else and is doing nothing for you or your family. So it's a bit of a trap.
Can I just jump in here, though, for a second, Tracy?
Sure.
Forgive me for interrupting you. That same reasoning did not stop Republicans from investigating Hillary Clinton till the cows came home.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, so do you see what I'm saying?
Fabulous history to be reminded of.
So why the caution with the Democrats then? Use the authority given, the oversight authority given to you as being in the majority. Republicans did so for years.
And as I said, I believe it is very necessary for Democrats to utilize the tools and to focus on oversight responsibilities. It is not a sufficient way to govern. It is necessary but not sufficient, and I certainly believe Democrats will be attentive to this. And the comparisons to the Clinton years, I'm familiar with the line of argument, but the similarities in our political times are minuscule. It's very difficult to compare those two. But Democrats know where our responsibilities lie, and they are ultimately with American families and improving people's lives. Oversight will be part of that.
Okay. Well, Alex,
one quick point, Meghna.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Sam.
One Democratic congressman I talked to used the phrase, we don't want to engage in Benghazi-style mm-hmm. investigations, quote unquote. That's a direct quote. They viewed that as a political witch hunt that went way too far, that was basically designed to hurt a certain political figure. They say they don't want to do that. And Pelosi has also said that Trump's own Justice Department, the U.S. Justice Department, is aggressively investigating him, extracting convictions and guilty pleas left and right. Why do Democrats need to jump in, you know, at the risk of making that whole thing look partisan when it's already moving forward at a pretty remarkable clip?
Right. Sahil, I'm glad that you said that, because Alex Conan, I was going to turn to you and basically ask that, you know, did Democrats mm-hmm. learn the lesson of the political futility of these kinds of endless investigations? And especially, as Sahil says, since there are institutions already, you know, doing their own investigations through the Justice Department.
Yeah, I mean, I have no doubt that the Trump administration would rather be investigated by House Democrats than by Special Counsel Mueller. That said, I don't think this is, at the end of the day, about oversight and investigations. I think it's about impeachment. I think that there are a lot of House Democrats and certainly a lot of just rank-and-file Democratic voters around the country who think that President Trump should be impeached. And I think the you can see, as you just reported, Nancy Pelosi and other House Democrats are in no rush to impeach the president. That's, I think, why they want to slow down any investigations within the House caucus. But I think once the train gets moving within the House Democrats, it's going to be very hard for her and House leaders to stop the impeachment of the president, which I actually think politically could help the president. Certainly in all the polling I've seen, I think House Democrats acting to remove the president, to impeach the president, would not go over well with the American public.
Mm. Well, let's get a couple more calls before I run out of time here. Troy is calling from Iowa City, Iowa. Troy, you're on the air.
Yes, I think it's going to unite the Trump base because everyone knew that it would come down to some time that Trump will have a disagreement with government. And today or this year or and next year is the best time to do it. It's going to unite his base because he's always said he's going to slash the government or start cutting things, and there was going to be a fight. So therefore, I think it's uniting his base.
Hmm.
The Republicans always said small government. Right now, Trump is saying, yep, it's time for a change. And the change that I'm going to start is at the border wall.
Right. Well,
no
Troy,
more free rides into the into the United States.
Troy, thank you for your call. Let's go to Kathy, who's calling from Colchester, Vermont. Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi. A lot of my questions have been addressed. I'm just feeling that how do we get Republicans to step up and support what we know the majority of Americans want to be done? And also, I just wholeheartedly support Senator Warren's point that it should not be so hard for all the people in this country that are struggling, and what the inept person in the White House is doing has just exacerbated it and made it worse. So how do we deal with all of that? How do we really get somewhere?
Right. Well, Kathy, thank you for your call. Alex Conant, let me start with you. We just got a minute to go here. How would you respond to Kathy?
Look, I think that there's big divisions in this country. I think the last two elections have shown that. I think President Trump has identified his route to reelection is solidifying his own base. It worked for him in 2016. I think he expects it'll work for him again in 2020. And frankly, I think the calculus is the same on the Democratic side. I don't see a lot of Democrats running for president start launching their campaigns with appeals to the middle, to independent voters. They're looking to their left. I think it's a big challenge, not just for the parties, but for the country. And I think we're seeing it play out day to day here in Washington.
Yeah. Well, Tracy Cefaldo, the idea of more years of political trench warfare between the parties leaves me more than a little melancholy, to be perfectly honest.
Well, I guess another way to look at it is we are about to see the most diverse Congress in American history. And what a moment that is. And for all of us to understand that with this kind of diversity will be all kinds of challenges. I'm excited about it. I'm thrilled for the potential. I think that we've got some really smart people in leadership positions, and we should be proud of that diversity. It's a very notable day.
Hmm. Well, you know what? With that, I'm going to wrap this conversation up because we're just out of time here. Tracy Cefaldo, Democratic Communications Specialist, joining us from Chicago. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Alex Conant, Republican strategist, joining us today from Washington. Alex Conant, it's great to have you. Thank you as well.
Thank you.
And Sahil Kapoor, national political reporter for Bloomberg News, with us from Washington. Sahil, it's always great to have you, and promise you'll come back when the impasse is broken over this government shutdown.
Absolutely, Meghna. Thank you.
All right. Well, you can subscribe, by the way, to the On Point newsletter. If you go to our homepage, it's onpointradio.org, and subscribe to the newsletter because you'll get weekly reflections and insights about our week's show from both me and my colleague, David Folkenflik. That's at onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.